You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. A very good Tuesday morning to you. Mike McMurrin for a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. And pleased to announce that the All Warrior Radio Network dog got lost yesterday. Actually, I left him. We were going to pick up my daughter Colleen at school. Jack and I go out and get the truck. Jack hops in the truck. I'm thinking about other stuff. I go back in to get my wallet or something. And go back, get in the car. Thinking about other things. Go pick my daughter up. We stop at the store. We come back home. Go to get out of the truck. Hey, grab Jack. Jack's not here. What are you talking about? Is it in the back seat, laying down? No, he's not. So then we go looking for him. Long story short, neighbor had him. Put a note in the mailbox. And we didn't see it. So, nonetheless, happy to have Jack back. When you're driving around looking for your dog, not a good feeling. So, interesting 24 hours. Big speech tonight. President of the United States will attempt to, some people are saying refocus, certainly what's going on. But, it'll be interesting to see if he can rise to the occasion. He's not a great speech maker to begin with. We'll see how he does tonight. We'll see if he can be presidential, and he certainly struggled with that. So here's to hoping that he is able to do that and lessens the burden, the anxiety on the nation. Today is Tuesday, so we'll do the Marine Corps Gazette Hour today. And we'll have a couple of writers. The UAS controversy in the Marine Corps continues. So we're going to talk to Captain Eric Covey. He wrote an article that's going to appear in the March Gazette, Dance with the One That Brought You. And an innovative culture will save USMC unmanned aviation before buying Air Force technology. Well, we'll see. We shall see. So, interested, because that debate to me, I don't understand what are we doing. And maybe Eric can shine some light on it. And then a gentleman that was supposed to be on last week talks in his article, Lieutenant Colonel John Keenan, reflecting on protect what you've earned, which is the Commandant's challenge. What does that mean? What does that mean? So protect what you've earned. So the gunner's going to join us. Gunner was not able to join us because he had some surgery yesterday. And it wasn't insignificant, but he just informed me via text message that he will be a part of the program today. So always interesting to interview your friends when they're heavily medicated. So it tends to be a pretty good time. And the gunner back today. And we'll see. We'll see. He's going to send me a text in a little bit, but he said he should be all right. So excited to have my friend and compatriot Mike Musselman back with us today. So it should be fun. So should be an interesting day. Should be an interesting 24 hours with the president, his speech tonight. And so we'll see if he can be presidential. And in the reviews of his budget that he'll outline tonight are kind of interesting in that they say, well, he did what he said he would do in the campaign. He's going to spend on defense, and he's going to cut spending in departments across the board, and some in a not insignificant way. So probably something that needs to be done. How much money can the government run on? So with all that said, a very good Tuesday morning to you. And with that, the United States Marine Corps Band ushers it in. Good morning.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Time for us to check the weather on a Tuesday. And then I want to share with you an Associated Press story. It's awesome. Okay, it's awesome. Anyway, around the Marine Corps. 54 degrees and partly cloudy in Quantico. 71 already at Camp Lejeune and cloudy. Granbury, Texas, 70. The Gunner. Yeah, what's up, Gunner? Gunner's on a little medicated right now. We want to have him on the radio and get that stopping power debate going. Up in North Dakota, 11 degrees and cloudy. 29 Palms, 42 and sunny. Camp Pendleton, 48 and sunny and partly cloudy. At Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark. Cloudy in 73. Okinawa, dark. Cloudy in 63. Fallujah, sunny in 72. Warming up in Iraq. And currently, at the home of All Marine Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, sunny in 47. That's right. It's supposed to warm up here. Get back into the 70s. Yeah. Be California for once. You got to be kidding me. All right. Eric Covey's Captain Ty. Going to join us here. We're going to talk Marine Corps Gazette stuff. And but before I do that, we talked about how excited that we as Marines were. And especially those of us who know Jim Mattis, John Kelly, and Joe Dunford. Okay? Let me read you a story. Trio of military men gaining growing influence with Trump. This is the Associated Press this morning. In a White House laden with competing power centers, a trio of military men has emerged as a force to be reckoned with. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, and Joint Chief Chairman Joseph Dunford has quickly formed a stabilizing alliance in an administration whose earliest days have been marked by turmoil. At working dinners and meetings with President Donald Trump, the men, all retired or current generals, have sought to guide the new leader and foreign policy novice. They have increasingly represented Trump around the world, seeking to allay concerns about the new president and his nascent foreign policy. Their fingerprints can be seen on the president's early national security moves, from the reworking of his controversial refugee and immigration order to the walking back of his talk of a, quote, military operation for deportations, to his search for a national security advisor after the first one was ousted. All three are notable in their independence from Trump. None had a prior relationship with him, but have long histories with each other. And then they talk about it and talk about them some more. I would recommend that to you. In fact, I should probably post this someplace on the All Marine Radio. I'll tweet this and I'll throw it up on the All Marine Radio website right now so you can go there and check it out. Under the guise of told you so. So again, the nation is benefiting right now from three guys who told you so. From three men who are just great, 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 great Americans. And they're ballers too. They're used to dealing with tremendously controversial subjects, and they do great, great, great things. And they will look you straight in the face and tell you you're wrong if they think that. So, and you know what? That's what the nation needs. It needs better men. It needs better women. It doesn't need yes people. All right. It needs people that have a stiff spine and will do the right thing no matter what. All right. We're going to take a quick break. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. You can check out all their products at battlemug.com. Starts with 10.5 pounds of aluminum. They machine it, mill it, and anodize it. And then you have a battle mug. Each one serialized and built. You can have it engraved. Mine is with the blue diamond. With the operator in mind, Picatinny rails on it, scopes, cameras, lasers, lights. You can put anything you put on your rifle. You can put on your mug. It's a perfect gift for a farewell, a promotion, a retirement, or any other special occasion. Check their whole line of products, and they've got cool ones. Battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Veteran-owned and operated, Marine-originated, made entirely in the United States. Support them. They're a great company. Battlemug.com. More of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on a Tuesday, we're going to do the Marine Corps Gazette Hour.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life? The Globalsoft Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Globalsoft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Globalsoft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I never felt
you know, the article's on the Associated Press, all right? It's called Trio of Military Men Growing Influence with Trump. And they're not military men. They're just great guys. They're great men, right, with incredible experience in terms of combat and fighting for the country, in terms of being leaders, and it's exciting. Let me tell you, and if Trump is seeing that, then he's not a buffoon, okay? So all you people who think he's a buffoon, all right, he keeps appointing, and I'll tell you what, and you can see, I would tell you straight up, you can see their hand in the selection of somebody like McMaster for National Security Advisor, that post, right? Completely different than Flynn. Completely different than Flynn. So, anyway, interesting stuff. Yeah, the article's entitled Trio of Military Men Gain Growing Influence. I just posted it on Twitter. It's on the All Marine Radio Facebook, along with a picture of Joe Dunford. That's right. He's a Boston guy, but don't hold that against him because he's nicer than most of them. Joining me now during the Marine Corps Gazette Hour is Captain Eric Hovey. Eric, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Mac. How about yourself?
I got no issues. Are you kidding me? We're taking over the planet. It's awesome, man. I love it. I got a chance to serve with General Kelly twice at the infantry officer course as an instructor for him, and then over in Iraq. I worked with he and General Mattis, and then Colonel Dunford was the chief of staff. So I got a chance to work with them shoulder to shoulder and get to know them and see them in action every day. And pretty impressive dudes. But I think you and I both know Marine Corps pretty proud of the fact that our guys are up there whooping on not only for as Marines but as Americans and making great contributions. So we're all pretty proud, I think.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to us about. Let's talk about you. Your article in this month's in the March edition of the Gazette called "Dance with the One That Brought You: An Innovative Culture Will Save USMC Unmanned Aviation Before Buying Air Force Technology Will." So I've been following this issue, and I don't understand it, and I don't understand it from a variety of perspectives because I was a user on a daily basis of the lethality, the long station time, the quality work that drones do for us. And the Marine Corps, the Marine Corps seems to be caught someplace, and I don't understand the way ahead. And while we're caught in that spot, we have F-18s, AV-8Bs, C-130s, all chipping in to do an armed reconnaissance mission. So I've been following it with interest, and as I said, I don't rightly understand it. So I'm happy to have you on this morning so that maybe you can shed some light on that. But before we do that, we got to find out about you. Born and raised where?
Well, so born actually in Wilmington, Delaware, but grew up kind of all over the country. So my folks, originally we lived in South Jersey, Pennsville, if you've ever heard of it.
Never.
And then, yeah, not a lot of folks have, unless you're from Pennsville.
There you go. Okay, what's Pennsville's claim to fame?
I guess it's close to the Jersey Turnpike.
Hey, I can tell you, Union, New Jersey, tallest water sphere in the nation.
Yeah, is that right?
Exactly. Every town's got some jackass little saying that they use. I just wonder if yours did. All right. So you grow up. So where do you when you think of home as a kid? Where is that?
Miami, Florida, for sure.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. We moved to Miami. So for all the professional sports teams, I like to follow the Dolphins and the Heat. And but I went to college in Illinois. So college-wise, I love University of Illinois for sure.
Well, they pretty much suck. How come they're not better, man? They're right next to Chicago. You figured they'd have a recruiting bonanza in that place. But your school always, they suck in sports in the Big Ten. Come on, what's up with you guys?
They're not doing great. I think that we might be able to turn around some of the recruiting classes now that Lovie Smith has moved on from the Bears and is going to be coaching the football team.
Wow.
Last year was still pretty rough, but.
No, you're right. You know, I agree with you. Lovie Smith, man, that's big stuff. Okay, so you're optimistic about the future. We'd love to see that. What about how'd some Marine Corps get on your radar?
I guess in our family, there's been a lot of military influence. My folks were both Navy enlisted, and my oldest brother John actually was the first commissioned Marine in the family. But I got three brothers and two sisters, and I'm number five, and all the older kids were either in the Navy or the Marine Corps. So kind of growing up, it was something I knew I always wanted to do. And
so where are you in the five kids?
As far as
lineal standing, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
by age.
As far as age goes, I'm the fifth, so I'm, turning 29 this summer. The oldest is, I'm gonna say 38.
Okay, so you're the baby?
No, I got a little sister as well. Okay. Six kids.
So you're the youngest boy. And you know that if you don't join the Navy or the Marine Corps, you're kind of going to be the family pussy, right?
Exactly that.
So, and you can't have that. So, so why the Marine Corps, not the Navy?
Well, actually, when I was going to University of Illinois, I came in as a Navy option midshipman.
Okay.
But really, I would say that the MESAPS and having a very good MOI at U of I at the time, they kind of set a good example for physical fitness and really just general leadership that I was more attracted to the Marine Corps side of the house. And so I didn't tell my folks. I just put in a change of option package. And then after it went through, I let them know. So then I switched over from Navy midshipman to Marine midshipman.
All right. So you joined the Marine Corps. Talk to me about military occupational specialties. What did you want to be? And tell everybody what you do. Tell everybody what you do for a living.
Sure. Currently I'm the intelligence officer for 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, which is in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
No, are they America's battalion, or is that 2-8?
That's 2-8.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's all right. We're actually the Beirut battalion, though.
Right.
We all remember. Yeah.
No, I had friends in it. That's back in the day when if you weren't part of 8th Marines, the rest of the Marine Corps was just kind of sitting around watching 8th Marines whooping on the planet. And so, they were quite the deal. How's Camp Lejeune treating you? And do you say it Lejeune or Lejeune?
I've heard it both ways. I always grew up with Lejeune, and then I think 4 or 5 years ago there's the article that came out that said it's probably Lejeune, so I apologize to the listeners if I offend anybody.
I've said Lejeune all my life, but I've taken to saying Lejeune after watching an old interview with his daughter. She was in her 80s, and the guy says, "Do you know people say that you mispronounce your name?" She said, "Well, Lejeune, that's the way we say it." And I was like, "Oh, well, hell, excuse me." Her name, Dolly Lejeune. Exactly. Exactly.
It's well, Mac,
I'm with you, man. I didn't know. And then, and I heard this Lejeune, like, where's the R in that word, man? But then after I saw her, then I became a little bit more sympathetic. I still struggle with it though. So talk to us about, tell us where you've been in the operating forces. So you're a captain now, you get out of the basic school, you go to what, Intel Officer Basic Course, and then you go out to the operating forces. Where were you? What were you doing?
Well, so there's 4 feeder MOSs for intelligence Marines, on the officer side of the house. So for me specifically, I graduated from TBS January 2010. And then I went to Air Intelligence Officers Course, AOC, which is in Virginia Beach. And so that the MOS there is 0207 as an Air Intel Officer. And then from there, I went to Okinawa. So So I was with Marine Aircraft Group 36, MAG 36, and HMM 265, which I was pretty fortunate in that respect because obviously frogs have been phased out of the Marine Corps at this point, but I was able to spend my last day on island in Okinawa watching the conversion of HMM 265 to become VMM 265.
You know,
that was pretty neat.
I don't like that whole losing the frog thing because the Osprey isn't the frog. It doesn't have the same kind of agility. So we lost our medium, like, agile platform. And we got this over-the-horizon clunker that is really slow in and out of an LZ. And so, and the 53 can't do that trick. So we're kind of a medium lift. I mean, and in Afghanistan, when we could have, you know, if you had 46s, you could have parked 46s in firm bases. And then when we made contact and they were trying to do the ROE shoot and scoot, you could have dropped the QRF, a squad behind them and cut them off and made their life really difficult. But we don't have that capability. So I'm not the biggest fan of the Osprey. I've seen that big fat hog try to get in and out of the zone. Right? And the Osprey doesn't do windows, man. God forbid we lose one of those things because it's not cheap. And so anyway, I just, you were there when it happened. So I won't hold you accountable for it. I just want you to know that I'm not pleased by it. So, so you do that. Then where do you go from there?
Yeah. So after the time in Okinawa, from there, I went to a B billet. So I actually went to PMA 263, which is the Navy Marine Corps Small Tactical Unmanned Air Systems Program Office. It's a mouthful. So that was in Naval Air Systems Command, which is in Pax River, Maryland, about an hour and a half south of D.C.
Yeah, that's from Quantico, almost due east, right? A little bit southeast of Quantico?
Yeah, yep. And you got to cross over a bridge to get from Virginia to Maryland. But
fairly substantial body of water between them, but nonetheless, it's there.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, so is that the genesis of you really getting to peel the onion on the UAS deal?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Because at the time, so in Okinawa, you know, I was aware that there was UAVs in the Marine Corps, but it didn't really directly impact anything that we were doing on the squadron side of the house. And honestly, at that point, even from the schoolhouse standpoint, we didn't really touch on a lot of unmanned aviation. It was more manned platforms. So Pax River 2012 was really my first exposure to UAVs in the Marine Corps. And then from there, going to an infantry battalion where you're absolutely the customer and the supported unit in many cases, or ought to be the supported unit, then it became much more pressing about how we actually employ these types of systems.
Okay, so as an infantry guy, and I was with 5th Marines, I was with 1st Marine Regiment the last time in Helmand in 2010-2011. Drones stay up forever. They're armed with Hellfire. They can see, they can listen, depending on which variant you have. And the Marine Corps has none of that in its inventory. So I'm going to ask you a basic question, then we got to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and explore your article. So, basic question. Why don't we have a better capability resident in the Marine Corps right now with all the different UAS options that are out there?
Well, I would say, Mac, that better capability directly ties to what specific mission set that you're talking about, and that, and as a general rule of thumb, if you look at the more complex systems that are available that are armed, so any of your Group 4, Group 5 systems, like the Reapers that got mentioned in some of the other Gazette articles, those systems, while they do have some longer time on station capabilities and then also the ability to carry weapon systems for close air support, that comes with a substantial price tag. And I think that when you look at the Marine Corps' mission set in terms of the larger DOD and what we're tasked to do, while there are cool capabilities that you can get with some of these larger systems, whether or not it's specifically the Marine Corps' role to buy and use those systems, and can we manage those programs effectively, I think that there's room for debate about that. And especially when you consider that there's a finite pot of money that the DOD has. So that if we're going to go increase our capabilities in one area, say armed UAVs, that's going to have to come at the expense of other programs. And especially when I look at an infantry battalion and some of the equipment that we have, you know, that do we want to take our already limited slice of the pie and then push it towards UAVs that are very expensive, and that would have to come at the expense of other programs.
Okay, so you're not saying that we don't need the capability. You're saying that for the dollars involved in it, that the opportunity cost, the juice may not be worth the squeeze.
I'd say that's probably a fair summation. I mean, there's definitely instances where persistent ISR and an armed CAS capability would be highly sought after, but again, that
well, especially now when our F-18s can't get in the sky, it might come in handy. I don't know. I'm just saying when we can put one out of four F-18s in the sky, it might be. All right, what about the one of the options that was looked at was leasing? You could lease those things for cheaper than you can buy it. Did you do any research into that piece of it?
As far as leasing systems?
Yeah, as far as leasing system goes.
No, that wasn't in the scope of the, I guess, the paper that I put to the Gazette.
Okay. All right.
It's one of those things, though, where even looking at some of the ISR contracts that we've had for comparable systems, so on the Marine Corps side of the house, Navy and Marine Corps, there were ISR services contracts in place using smaller systems, mainly Group 2, like the Scan Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily know if that would be any cheaper in the long term.
Okay.
Right. Is that an option? Yes, but I wouldn't say it's necessarily cheaper.
All right. My guest is Captain Eric Covey. His article appears in the March Marine Corps Gazette. It's got a long title. Dance with the One That Brought You. And he must be a country music guy. An innovative culture will serve USMC manned aviation before buying Air Force technology will. So we're going to come back and talk about an innovative culture. More of a Tuesday edition, All Marine Radio, coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Gunnery Sergeant Gnarly Ermey here with important information for veterans. At 2,600 American job centers nationwide, veteran and transitioning military personnel can find help with career counseling, resumes, and job placement. You want more information, don't you? The Department of Labor offers a variety of programs to help our military heroes find good jobs or continue their education. What are you waiting for?
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday, Marine Corps Gazette Hour, and we're joined by Captain Eric Hovey. Calls Miami his home, educated in Illinois, and an intelligence officer in the Marine Corps with the 1st Battalion 8th Marine. The grunts, because the grunts run the world. Just in case.
Absolutely.
Just in case you're not familiar with it. So, Eric, let's talk about the premise of your article, innovation in that community. Tell us what innovation is going to get us and why it's the way to go.
Well, I think that innovating and finding out how to use the existing programs or record that the Marine Corps has, so specifically that's the RQ-7B Shadow and then the RQ-21A Blackjack, By focusing on the systems that we currently have, you'll be able to employ them to their max effectiveness and better integrate them with ground-centric operations, which is, as you just said, the infantry is really what the Marine Corps is all about. And my concern is that unless we make that the focus of effort, how do we integrate these systems into supporting the GC's scheme of maneuver? We miss out on opportunities to use them in different ways, and then also it leads to going down pipe dreams for systems that really aren't feasible for the Marine Corps' budget. So something like the MQ-9, for example. And I would say, too, that part of the challenges that I've seen, and I alluded to it in the article, but right now, since I've been at 1-8, which has been about a year and a half, I've only had one opportunity to really work with the VMUs, and that was an integrated training exercise, ITX, which some of your listeners might know it as Mojave Viper, or Enhanced Mojave Viper, EMV. It's had many different name changes over the years.
Right.
But it's, you know, just a giant combined arms exercise out in 29 Palms. And that's really the capstone event to be able to integrate everything. You know, you've got Artie Battalion that's going to go out there. You've got different skid squadrons that support fixed wing squadrons. And when we went out, we had a lot of trouble, I think, being able to integrate with the VMUs and effectively employ the systems to their max effectiveness. And I think that getting additional reps before ITX, when you look at some of the battalion training events like McCree's or other training exercises, whether in 29 Palms or for us here in Camp Lejeune, but by getting that exposure early, you'd be able to better use the systems.
The programs that you're talking about, though, Shadow, I mean, that thing ought to be in a museum someplace. Low, loud, you know, can only watch, can't shoot. So show me the linkage between our programs of record and where they're going, because the frustration with some of the writers of these articles is that, hey, look, we're nowhere close to where we need to be. We need to be able to have platforms that can not necessarily fly off the boat, because that may the price tag on that thing might be a killer. Until we get ashore, we may have to be content with armed ISR and using other platforms. And once we get ashore, and this was the argument for buying off the shelf Reaper and Reaper's follow-on versions. Once we get ashore, Reaper's footprint much smaller than Shadow, for instance, and requires much less. We go there, we normally see an airfield, and then we're in business. Talk to me about programs of record. Can we deliver what we're used to working with? Because I can tell you that the Shadow platform, that thing ought to be in Quantico in a museum.
Okay. Well, there's a few different points there. So I guess I'll start first with some of the assumptions about the footprint for the Reaper and kind of concerns from that standpoint.
Okay.
So for one, and even I guess to go back to your earlier point about the feasibility of leasing these systems, because the Reaper uses a satellite downlink to facilitate beyond line of sight travel,
right,
it requires a much more substantial footprint to be able to operate this. The ground control station. So the actual GCS, if you look at a system for an RQ-21 or a Blackjack, you know, you can take that ground control station, and it's feasible, especially in the RQ-21 because it's designed for shipboard operations. You can pack it up and bring it on a MEW. We don't have that capability with the MQ-9 because the actual GCS itself is much larger, but then also you have to factor in that the Air Force, when they employ these aircraft, oftentimes they have additional sensors, and the sensors and payloads, keeping it at an appropriate classification level for radio, they necessitate what's called a SCIF, so sensitive compartmented intelligence facilities, and the SCIFs, that's additional construction costs and manning requirements that you would have to add to the VMUs. So there's lots of ancillary costs that when people talk about MQ-9, they don't necessarily factor in. And then also the support personnel that are required to operate and maintain those systems. So you're looking at additional military construction to build the SCIFs that the VMUs don't currently have. So now you have to do that developmental cost so that you can actually fly the air vehicles. And then the ground control stations aren't interoperable. And in a perfect world, a DOD contractor could be able to build one GCS that could control all three aircraft. But in the case of Shadow, which is made by Textron, RQ-21, which is made by Institu, owned by Boeing, and then the MQ-9 is owned by General Atomics, those are three different companies, and trying to build one common ground control station that can operate all three air vehicles, that would be a considerable challenge.
Okay, talk to me. Talk to me. The delta, though, between the VMU genre and the capability that we've known in the past is so huge. How do we get there?
Well, I think one thing is to look at, you know, potentially what are other countries doing. So
okay.
When you, and again, looking from a open source reports coming out of the conflict with Russia and Ukraine, the Russians' use of unmanned air systems integrated with their fires capability is pretty impressive. You know, I obviously have read additional reporting on it that I can't necessarily comment on here, but if you're able to either do your own research on the subject, look at some of the products from the Foreign Military Studies Office, which is a good open source resource out of Fort Leavenworth, you can see that the Russians have done a very good job of being able to take their ground fire assets. So for us, it would be artillery battalions, but they also have multiple rocket launch systems. They do a good job of using unmanned plus Group 2, Group 3 size systems to be able to queue back to batteries and then prosecute fire missions.
Okay.
The UAVs themselves aren't necessarily delivering the ordnance, but they're still being an effective part of the kill chain. And I think that that's something that, because we have Group 4 and Group 5 systems in the DoD that can employ ordnance, I think culturally we have a bias to want to do air-delivered fires. And that's absolutely a critical capability for the MAGTAF. But we don't want to lose sight of the fact that we also have, you know, ground fire systems, IDF systems that we can also use.
No, but the problem with ground fired systems, in my experience, and I employ them every day, is they take too long to clear. If we're shooting XCAL or something, you're talking about 20, sometimes 40 minutes to get a fire mission cleared. You can't wait that long. And so aviation became the card played straight off the top of the deck because they see it, they can shoot it. And the distances that we're shooting, you know, are, you know, whether it be HIMARS or XCAL or whatever our ordinance is, unless we're shooting old conventional stuff, it's a nightmare to get cleared in a joint environment where we're having to clear commercial airspace up to 40,000 feet. So I hear what you're saying, but my own life experience is telling me that we need more than simply an observer there, and there's more capability out there. So let me go back to so give me this land of innovation that is going to get us a better what is a better version of what we're talking about? What is a better capability? You don't think it needs to be a shooter?
Not necessarily a shooter, no. But I think that there's additional payload. So that in the case of the RQ-21A, you know, the commercial name for the system was the Integrator, and then the Marine Corps Program of Record is designated as the Blackjack. But the reason it was called the Integrator was because it was designed from the get-go to have a empty payload bay that could facilitate putting different types of payload systems in. And interestingly enough, from a larger Marine Corps standpoint, the payload programs of record are funded primarily through Marine Corps green intel dollars. So okay. it's a resident capability that the Marine Corps is investing in. But I would say, you know, really the two biggest capabilities that we looked at were SIGINT EW type payload systems.
Right.
And then you can also look at synthetic aperture radar or SAR.
Okay. And those would be those would be part of the payload. Could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could be.
All right. Could be, but it's not a shooter.
No, I don't understand. I would say it could be, but it doesn't have to be to provide value to the MAGTAF. And it really depends on the mission set that you're training to.
Right.
And then, you know, what are the circumstances? And the common adage that comes out is, you know, you don't want to train to the
and I know, but I like a shooter. Why is it? Come on, man. I'm a grunt. I want that thing to shoot because it goes up there. It's the same thing with Harvest Hawk, right? You know,
sure.
F-18 checks on. I'm Viper, blah, 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 blah. I've got 25 minutes of fuel. Then I got to go tank. I'm back for 25. Then I'm back to the boat. You know, the Harriers seem to have like 15 minutes of fuel when they show up, right? Those pigs. Those pigs, although they deny it, which is interesting. And so what do you have left? Where's Reaper? Because it's up there staying. Harvest Hawk checks on with 4 hours of station time. I love that. And now I agree. You know, we may not fight, you know, the last war. So in terms of our design, it ought to have that capability to become a shooter, and I'm sympathetic with that. So in your perfect world, how does this problem get solved? Because, and in the meantime, we're killing our F-18s in terms of hours, sure. Right? And that's part of it. So to me, a squadron of unmanned, you know, and the expansion of unmanned aerial system is going to be the future of the Marine Corps, whether all the Top Gun dudes like it or not. You know, having them fly aircraft and getting them blown out of the sky when we can roll another one out there with no pilot in it is cheaper to field the aircraft, right? And we can be more aggressive with what we do. So that's the future. So tell me how this gets solved in the best interest of the Marine Corps. What happens?
Well, I think there's a few concrete things steps that we can take to better shape the future of unmanned aviation for the Marine Corps. So to start, if you look at the original charter of Marine Unmanned Aviation Squadrons, MUs, in like 1996, back when they had the precursor to the Shadow, which name escapes me off the top of my head, their strict mission set was air reconnaissance. And since then, the mission statement for VMU has expanded to conducting electromagnetic spectrum warfare, multi-sensor imagery reconnaissance, combined arms coordination control, destroying targets day or night, all weather conditions during expeditionary, joint, and combined operations.
Okay.
So it's a mouthful, and I think that as a starting point, it's worth problem framing at senior levels in the Marine Corps down to the tactical level. What exactly do we want, like, the prioritized missions of unmanned aviation to be? Because as you've alluded, you know, like, the MQ-9 can do close air support. So is close air support the focus of effort, or is it air reconnaissance? Because there's, you know, you only have finite amounts of time to train and to prioritize, and especially when you start levying all the other Marine Corps requirements, you can't be good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and you really have to understand, you know, what's going to be our key mission set. My recommendation, based off of being at a infantry battalion and typically what the grunt customers want, I would submit that air reconnaissance is the most critical mission set. But I also understand that other aviation equities might feel differently. I think it's worth hashing out what the focus of effort is. And then trying to train to the priority missions.
Trying to train but we have to buy the platform first. And right now in our inventory, we don't have shit. So tell me what you would buy. Would you buy? Let's start with that. We won't talk about the training piece. So we got about 2 minutes left. If you were king for a day, what are you buying? And what is its primary focus?
Oh, I would say use the systems that we already have. Because the Marine Corps has already invested money in the RQ-21. So I think the challenge is find out how to use that the best, because we don't live in a perfect world. And the reality of the situation is that the acquisitions process is so convoluted and long that you can spend a lot of time trying to get what you want and get nothing for it, or you can use the system that you have. And that's the whole genesis of the title too. You know, dance with one that brought you. We've got RQ-21. Let's make the most of it.
All right. What do you want people to know about your article that I haven't been smart enough to ask you?
I think just in general that when I've read a lot of people commenting on what systems we should buy and how we can change the Marine Corps. In terms of, you know, hey, the Marine Corps needs X capability, or we need small unmanned systems, or we need Reapers. A lot of times, and I didn't realize this till I came to Pax River, there's a lack of understanding, candidly and frankly, that people don't necessarily understand how the DoD purchases and procures new systems.
Right.
And it's not to defend the process because, again, acquisitions is slow and frustrating, and I've lived through that for 3 years at NAVAIR myself. But we do a good job in the Marine Corps for most things of establishing professional military education. And if you want to know books on leadership, you Google Commandant's Reading List and you can find, you know, excellent recommendations and like, hey, these are what the Commandant recommends that you read to get smart. And they even have it tailored too for aviation categories, and different other communities within the Marine Corps. But one thing that I've noticed is that there isn't a lot of good codified professional reading on acquisitions. And it's not the most sexy of subjects, but I realized that if we're going to be smart and informed about how we shape the future of the Marine Corps, I think it would behoove all of us to do more professional reading tailored to those subjects. So if you want to make the case, and there's absolutely people that say I'm completely wrong, and I'm not going to say that my article is the end-all be-all, but if you want to make the case for why we should buy MQ-9s, I think you need to know the language and the right verbiage to be able to make an argument to say this is why we need to adjust the JSIDS process. Or this is why during programming in the PPBE cycle that we need to allocate more money towards Group 4 or Group 5 systems. Because there's the specific evidence or the specific knowledge about how you make those changes. If you've never been in an acquisitions boat, you don't necessarily know the right verbiage. So I think adjusting professional reading for the Marine Corps to include more acquisitions-related books might be something that would be helpful. And that was beyond the scope of the article. When I submitted it.
Okay. You know what? You're not the first person that has expressed that sentiment, essentially saying, you know what? The DoD doesn't buy like that. Okay. And we can all lament the fact that it's not Kmart, but it's the reality. So before you can participate in the discussion, you have to go ahead and you got to come to at least a fundamental understanding of how we procure and programs of record, and I think any discussion should start from that. And so you make a valid point. Eric, first of all, thanks for doing this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, Mac, really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
No, and I hope you don't mind if in the future when we talk this issue, I give you a call, and maybe you can come back on and give us an opinion.
I'd welcome the opportunity, Mac. I really appreciate it.
All right. Be nice to all those grunts out there. You know they're the best things on the planet.
Oh, absolutely. I love the grunts.
All right. Hey, you know what? That was the right thing to say. Nice going. All right. Thank you for the visit, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mac. Take care.
You bet. That is Captain Eric Hovey advocating for a smarter use of the RQ-21, which is a program of record in the Marine Corps, and a better understanding of the procurement process when you participate in the debate. All right. So, interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break. John Keenan, Lieutenant Colonel, type United States Marine Corps, talks about what the Commandant's guidance, keeping what you've earned. What does that mean? So, we'll hear from him coming up next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio as the Marine Corps Gazette Hour continues on the All Warrior Radio Network.